Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya. Naram chaiva narotamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tato jayam udirayat. Nashta prayashu abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, unto Nara Narayan Rishi, the supermost human, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the Personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Today, first of all, I want to beg the blessings of the senior Vaishnavas. I know it's not appropriate for me to sit up here with senior Vaishnavas in the audience, but I hope I can say something useful today with your blessings, and please excuse me for having the audacity to sit up here. So today, we are starting a new chapter. We are in the 12th canto. We are starting 12:11 today. We're going to read the chapter summary as well as the first four shlokas. So, is it up there? The name of this chapter is the summary description of the Mahapurush. So I'll read the summary first. In the context of worship, this chapter describes the Mahapurush and the various expansions of the sun in each month. Sri Suta first tells Shanaka Rishi about the material objects through which one can understand the major limbs, the secondary limbs, the weapons, and the garments of Lord Sri Hari. Then he outlines the process of practical service by which a mortal soul can attain immortality. When Shanaka shows further interest in learning about the expansion of Lord Hari in the form of sun god, Suta replies that Lord Sri Hari, the indwelling controller of the universe and its original creator, manifests himself in the form of the demigod of the sun. Sages describe this sun god in many features according to his different material designations. To sustain the world, the personality of Godhead manifests his potency of time as the sun travels throughout the 12 months, beginning with Chaitra, along with 12 sets of personal associates. One who remembers the opulences of the personality of Godhead, Sri Hari, in his form as the sun, will become free of sinful reactions. So we're reading text 1 through 4. We'll do text 1 responsively, and we'll read the rest all together. So this is 12th canto, 11th chapter, text 1. Sri Shanaka Vacha. Ate mam artam prichchamo.
Ate mam artam prichchamo.
Bhavantam bahubitamam.
Bhavantam bahubitamam.
Samasta tantra ratante.
Samasta tantra ratante.
Bhavan bhagavata tatvavit.
Bhavan bhagavata tatvavit.
Sri Shanaka Vacha.
Ate mam artam prichchamo.
Bhavantam bahubitamam.
Bhavantam bahubitamam.
Samasta tantra radhante.
Samasta tantra radhante.
Bhavan bhagavata tatvavit.
Bhavan bhagavata tatvavit.
Prabhus?
Sri Shanaka Vacha.
Shoshanaka Vaksha.
Imam Artam Prichamo.
Artam Prichamo.
Avantam Bahuvitamam.
Avantam Bahuvitamam. Samasta Tantra Radhante. Bhavan Bhagavata Tattvavit. Shri Shanaka Vacha. Ate Mam Artam Prichamo. Navantam Bahuvitamam. Samasta Tantra Radhante. Bhavan Bhagavata Tattvavit. Shishanaka Vacha. Ate Mam Artam Prichamo. Bhavantam Bahuvitamam. Samasta Tantra Rakante. Bhavan Bhagavata Tattvavit. Shishanaka Vacha. Shishanaka Vacha. Ate Mam Artam Prichamo. Bhavantam Bahuvitamam. Samasta Tantra Radhante. Bhavan Bhagavata Tattvavet. Shishanaka Vacha. Shishanaka said. Atta. Now. Imam. This. Artam. Matter. Prichchama. We're inquiring about. Bhavantam. From you. Bahuvittamam. The possessor of the broadest knowledge. Samasta. Of all. Tantra. The scriptures prescribing practical methods of worship. Radhante. In the definitive conclusions. Bhavan. You. Bhagavata. O great devotee of the Supreme Lord. Tattvavit. The knower of the essential facts. Translation by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Sri Shanaka said, O Sutta, you are the best of learned men and a great devotee of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, we now inquire from you about the definitive conclusion of all Tantra scriptures. Let's read text 2-3 all together. And then we'll do 4 as well. So 2-3 are together. So we'll read it all together. Tantrika parichayayam kivalasya shriyapate ango pangam yagampam kalpayanti yatachaya tanna varnaya badrante kriya yogam bhugutasa yena kriyana kumena vatyoyaya damartaka. Translation, all good fortune to you. Please explain to us, who are very eager to learn, the process of Kriya Yoga, practiced through regulated worship of the Transcendental Lord, the husband of the Goddess of Fortune. Please also explain how the Lord's devotees conceive of his limbs, associates, weapons, and ornaments in terms of particular material representations. By expertly worshiping the Supreme Lord, a mortal can attain immortality. And text 4, and we'll do it all together, Sanskrit. Sutta vacha namaskritya gurun bhakshe
Vibhutir Vaishnavirapi Yakurta Vedatam Prabhyam Acharya Padmaja Vibhidhi.
Translation, Sutta Goswami said, offering obeisances to my spiritual masters, I shall repeat to you the description of the opulences of Lord Vishnu, given in the Vedas and Tantras by great authorities, beginning from the lotus-born Brahma. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So in this chapter, we are speaking about the Mahapurush, which I consulted with Pushkar Prabhu on this point. When we use the term Mahapurush, we are referring to Vishnu as an expansion in the material world. So this is, the source is Pushkar Prabhu. So just wanted to give him credit for that. So I'm going to give a brief overview of this chapter, and then you'll hear details from the other class givers. But since I have the task of giving the summary, I'll give a brief overview of the whole chapter, and then we'll also talk about the first four shlokas. So, as many of you know, Mahapurush means the supreme enjoyer. Purush means enjoyer, and Maha means the supreme enjoyer, which, of course, is only Lord Vishnu. So there are two expansions that we're going to talk about in this chapter of Vishnu within the material world. The first expansion is the Virata Rupa, or the universal form. And then the second expansion we'll talk about is Vishnu as expanded within the sun, meaning the sun god with all his associates. So those are two expansions of Vishnu within this material world. So as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we don't necessarily focus so much on these forms because we prefer to focus on Krishna's transcendental forms. But it doesn't make them any less important, and we definitely should know about them and understand them. It's through Vishnu's mercy that he expands within these forms within the material world for our benefit. And just because we love Krishna, we love Vishnu, we want to understand everything about him, and not just the things that we focus on, but we want to know everything, all his activities, all his expansions. So the first Mahapurush is the universal form. So many of you know about this form from the 11th chapter in the Bhagavad Gita. But just a little bit about the description of Virata Rupa, or the universal form. It includes the nine basic elements of creation, starting with the unmanifest nature and their subsequent transformations. Once this universal form is instilled within consciousness, the three planetary systems become visible within it. So he's holding, or is the three planetary systems, you can imagine it as a huge form. He has embodied that within him. The earth are his feet, the sky is his navel, the sun his eyes, the wind his nostrils, the demigod appropriation his genitals, death his anus, and the moon his mind. The heavenly planets are his head, their directions his ears, and the demigods protecting the various planets his many eyes. The god of death is his eyebrows, shame his lower lip, greed his upper lip, delusion his smile, and moonshine his teeth, while the trees are the almighty Purusha's bodily hairs, and the clouds the hair on his head. So one way that we can appreciate the universal form, we know a lot about it from the 11th chapter in the Gita, where he shows this form to Arjuna, and Arjuna is completely bewildered and taken aback, and he can't handle it. He says, please go back to your other form that I can feel is more, you know, not as horrible and scary. So, but one way that we can think of the Mahapurush of the Ratarupa is by, you know, seeing the trees and the lakes as his various limbs and part of his body, and to appreciate that as a part of him. And also when we're speaking to other people, you know, and they're not quite ready to accept that God is, you know, a blue person, and he's a cowherd, and he, you know, has a female consort and everything that we know about Krishna, they're not quite ready to accept that as God. You know, we can tell them, well, you know, God also has other impersonal features, and a part of that is lakes and rivers and nature, and sometimes they're more likely to be able to appreciate that as God. You know, people are more sometimes able to accept an impersonal form. So we can start, you know, with people who aren't ready to accept the personal form of Vishnu or the transcendental form, we can start there to tell them, well, you can appreciate this form. And most people can relate to that, you know, and we can also relate to that because we have a certain way that we feel when we are in nature. Isn't that so? We can sort of feel closer to God in nature. We can feel that we are one with him. So we can understand how this form is, there is something, you know, transcendental about it. It's something you can feel closer to God within nature. So I was thinking that's one way that we can tell, you know, new devotees or karmis or whomever, this is one way that we can appreciate God. And the chapter goes on to describe his various features. So like I said, I'll just touch upon all these different things, and then you'll hear about it more from the speakers who are speaking in this chapter. So descriptions of his various features. This flower garland is the material energy comprising various combinations of the three modes. His crown is Brahma Loka. His sacred thread is syllable Om. Ananta, Lord's sitting place, is unmanifest phase of material nature. His club is the chief element, prana, conch shell is water element, and Sudarshan disc fire. The goddess Shri appears with him in this world as his internal potency. So Shri is the spiritual source of the material energy. Just as the three material modes of nature, they all have their source in spiritual energies and internal energies, that Chidananda. So similarly, Shri is the internal source of the material energy. And Vishnu always appears with her as she is always present with him. Another feature of the universal form is that it is a manifestation of Akshiradakshay Vishnu, or super soul. Later on in the chapter, we'll hear how anyone who rises early in the morning and with a purified mind fixes upon the Mahapurush, quietly chants the description of his characteristics, will realize him as the supreme absolute truth residing within the heart. So from that we can understand that he's a manifestation of the super soul. So then we move on to descriptions of the sun god. So after hearing an account of the exalted conversation between Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit, Shaunaka now inquires about the sun as the expansion of the Supreme Lord. Although the sun is the king of all planets, Sri Shaunaka is specifically interested in this effulgent globe as the expansion of Sri Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So just to briefly mention, these conversations are taking place at Naimishiranya, and they are headed by Suta Goswami. And if you recall, Suta Goswami was in the assembly of when Shukadev Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit were having their conversations. So now Suta Goswami, who was in that assembly, is relating what he heard to the sages at Naimishiranya. So Shaunaka is sort of the head of those sages inquiring from Suta Goswami. So Suta Goswami goes to explain to the sages and Shaunaka Rishi, the sun globe is the place where the Supreme Lord is worshipped within this world. Spiritual initiation is means of purification for spirit soul, and rendering devotional service or Kriya Yoga to the personality of Godhead is the process for eradicating all of one's sinful reactions. So it mentions later in the chapter that it's quite fitting that the Lord within this material world would be worshipped within the Son, because the Lord is so effulgent and the Son is the most effulgent thing within this universe. So it makes sense that the Lord's representation within this universe would be within the Son. And I wanted to clarify that when we say Kriya Yoga, and this I also consulted with Pushkar Prabhu about, when we talk about Kriya Yoga, we're basically talking about devotional service. But it's more like the language of the tantras, which we're now talking about. And tantras are those portions of the Vedas that talk about ritualistic worship. So you can think about it as devotional service within the context of ritualistic worship and within the context of tantras. For example, Narada Pancharatra is a tantra within a Veda. And one of the synonyms that we read in the slokas is tantra was one of the words. So the translation for that is the scriptures prescribing practical methods of worship. So that's what tantras contain. And we're kind of speaking about those parts of the Vedas within these last chapters of the 12th canto. So when we think of the sun god, I know many of us just think of like one personality, and maybe we think like, oh, it's like Vivaswan is the sun god. But actually here it goes into a little more detail about the sun god. It's actually kind of a post. Same with Indra and Brahma. So in each of the 12 different months, a different personality takes the post of a sun god. And Vivaswan is one of the posts, one of the months. It'll go more into that later in the chapter. And we've seen pictures of the sun god like riding his chariot. And he's actually not alone. So there's like seven categories of sun god and his associates. And I'll tell you what those are in a second. And the seven categories are all around that chariot. And they all change every month. So the seven categories with the sun god, well, one is the sun god. And then the second category is the sage. And all of these categories also have their associates. So with the sage, for example, there's 60,000, they're called Valakilias, and they're thumb size, and they're sages. And they're all singing, chanting Vedic hymns as the sun god is riding around in his chariot. So there's the sun god, the second category is the sage and his associates, then the third category is the yaksha and his associates, and the yaksha harnesses the horses of the chariot. The Gandharva sings his praises. The apsara, they dance before the chariot. The Rakshasa, they push the chariot from behind. And the Naga, they arrange the chariot ropes. So for example, we'll hear this later on. So it goes through like all the 12 months in this chapter, and for each month, it lists the names of all the different personalities that fall within these seven categories. So for example, one of the months is, my dear sage, Dhata is the sun god, Kristathali as the Apsara, Heti as the Rakshasa, Vasuki as the Naga, Ratakrit as the Yaksha, Pulasya as the Sage, and Tumburu as the Gandharva, rule the month of Madhu. And then, for example, another month is Vivaswan as the sun god, Ugrasen as the Gandharva, Vyagra as the Rakshasa, Asarana as the Yaksha, Vrigu as the Sage, Anumlocha as the Apsara, and Shankapala as the Naga. They rule the month of Nabhasya. So in each of the 12 months, the associates change. All these personalities are the opulent expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, in the form of the sun god. So when we say sun god, we mean all the personalities altogether. These deities take away all the sinful reactions of those who remember them each day at dawn and sunset. So if you remember these personalities at dawn and at sunset, they can help to take away our sinful reactions. And it's says later in the chapter, the two purposes of the sun god are to disseminating purity of consciousness for both this life and next, and for protection of all the worlds. He expands himself in each day of Lord Brahma. Lord Hari, in his expansion as the sun god, is the source of the material energy, which is described in 9 aspects. Oshanaka, he represents the time, the place, the endeavor, the performer, the instrument, the specific ritual, the scripture, the paraphernalia of worship, and the result to be achieved. So if we think about, for a moment, you know, the sun god riding on his chariot with all his different categories of associates, and how he regulates time, and he regulates the months, and he regulates all the planets, and it's an actual personality. And we can compare that to, you know, what the popular knowledge is in the Western, or, you know, in the world, about what the solar system looks like. Right, so we all studied this in school, that the solar system, we learned that it was heliocentric, and the sun, if you've seen pictures of it, the sun is like really huge, and it's a globe, and the sun is in the center, and then all the other 9 planets are revolving around the sun. Right, and it's impersonal. We don't talk about it being a personality, or there's no god. You know, it's just like somehow the sun is impersonally regulating all the planets. And I actually saw a YouTube on it, and I just wanted to remind myself like what I learned in school about the solar system. And, you know, it talks about how the sun is like very huge, and all the planets rotate around the sun. And the sun is holding all the planets with its massive gravity. And if for some reason the sun would cease to, you know, have gravity or cease to regulate, control the planets, the planets would just careen into outer space. So this is actually, you know, a YouTube that is like geared towards learning in schools about our solar system. So then we can also understand how important it is, the Vedic planetarium, to the construction of the temple of the Vedic planetarium that's going on, how important it is to have that so that we can give real information to the world from the Vedas about what the sun really is and, you know, what the universe really looks like. So a little further more about the chariot of the sun god. The entire Kala Chakra, or wheel of time, is established on the wheel of the sun god's chariot. The chariot of the sun god only has one wheel, which is known as Samvatsara. The 12 months are calculated to be its 12 spokes. The 6 seasons are the sections of the rim, and the 3 Chaturmasya periods are its 3 sectioned hub. One side of the axle carrying the wheel rests upon the summit of Mount Sumeru, and the other rests upon Manasatara Mountain. Right? So if you recall the Vedic universe model, one side of the axle rests on like the outer mountain, and the other axle rests on the central mountain. Affixed to the outer end of the axle, the wheel continuously rotates on Manasatara Mountain like the wheel of an oil pressing machine. Manifesting his potency of time as the sun god, he travels around in each of the 12 months to regulate planetary motion within the universe. So this kala, or time, is established upon the wheel of the sun god. And I found a very ecstatic shloka in the first canto about time, how time is such a powerful representation of the Lord within this universe. So this is in the first canto, chapter 9. Everything, therefore, is controlled by the supreme kala, or time, which is a forceful representative of the Lord within the material world. Even the great controllers of the universe, Brahmaji, is also under the control of that time. Therefore, one should not grudge being thus controlled by time, despite being a true follower of religious principles. Despite the power of pious acts, the power of personalities, the power to exert management, and the power of weapons under the direct supervision of Lord Krishna, the Pandavas suffered so many practical reverses, which can only be explained as due to the influence of Kala, or inevitable time. Kala is identical with the Lord himself, and therefore the influence of Kala indicates the inexplicable wish of the Lord himself. There is nothing to be lamented when a matter is beyond the control of any human being. So I have a few more points, but I'll just stop here for now, see first if there's any discussion. Would anybody like to? Yes, Shesha Prabhu, thank you.
Thank you for the class. Did sun god changes every month? Is it our months or on a day of Brahma's days and months or who?
Well, it's like the Vedic months. Yeah, it's our months. You know how we have different names for them? It's not like the Roman calendar. I wrote down some of their names. It's like the Vedic calendar. So there's like the month of Madhu, the month of Madhava, the month of Naprasya, month of Urja. There's just some of the names of the months. They basically follow the lunar calendar, you know, with the new moon being the start of the month and the full moon being the middle of the month.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
A small thing, I caught how you were mentioning that the Vedic planetarium is going to show how the universe really is. But Sukadeva Goswami in the fifth canto says he's repeating what he heard from the sages and from Lord Brahma, and even Lord Brahma doesn't know it perfectly. So, you know, what it really is, I think, you know, even Krishna's creative potency is an internal competition with his omniscience.
Thank you. That's a very nice point. We can show it as best we can understand it from the fifth canto, from the Srimad. That's best we can understand it. Yeah. And even within that, there's, I believe, like four different versions, right? So it's like the best that we can understand it and present it to the world.
Yeah, and then there's, I'm getting a little technical, but there has been in the Western discourse a bit of a thing where coming out of the Reformation and they sort of projected surety on understanding the material energy, you know, which, you know, as God's book of nature. And of course, there's no surety there either. It's really not that whoever understands the material nature best wins, per se. So, I don't know, I'm just throwing a few.
Thank you for those very nice points, sort of like the academic point of view. I appreciate that. I read a little statement by a famous lady scientist who I'm actually sort of related to, and she was saying how she's an astrophysicist at Harvard, and she was saying how everyone who is a great scientist eventually comes to that point of understanding that they really don't know what the universe really is, and they also come to the point where they have to think that there is a greater power. So anyone who is a great scientist, intellectual, they have to eventually come to that point. So I thought that was kind of nice.
Yeah, I know somewhere Srila Prabhupada wrote that sometimes the Lord takes the position of the sun god, Narayan. Occasionally, not all the time, but
yes,
on occasional.
Actually, that is mentioned in the chapter. In one of the months, it says the sun god is Vishnu.
Yeah.
So that, thank you.
And also the description about the sun and the chariot and stuff, that seems rather metaphorical, you know, with the axle resting on this mountain and that mountain and, you know, and the ropes like this. It's a whole metaphor there. It's not like to be taken literal. you know?
It's not literal? Is that what you're saying?
It's not literal. It's a metaphor. You know, it's not like this one of the axle of the sun rests upon Mount Meru and the other one thing. That is just a metaphor.
Well, I wouldn't accept that it's a metaphor, but, you know, if that's your opinion, that's okay. I think everything in the Bhagavatam is very literal, even though it's not a part of our sort of mundane mind, so it's like hard for us to accept that, but I personally don't see it as a metaphor. I see it as quite literal.
That whole description is literal, you think?
Yes.
You can read it back. I mean, you can listen.
Just because we can't see like two sides of an axle on two different mountains and there's just like one wheel, like what do you mean? There's just like one wheel and there's like two ends of an axle on two different mountains. Like we can't really like comprehend that, but I believe that it is quite literal. And there's actually like some YouTubes, I wanted to show it, but there's not enough time. It shows how that the two axles on the two different mountains and the one wheel.
I'm going to make it real quick because otherwise they're going to get beat up. But, you know, when we say literal, how are we defining that? Is it something that we can encompass within our present experience in three-dimensional space?
That's a very nice
point.
So
how do we know that all of reality can be in that experience that we have? If we say our present experience is the defining criteria, what is could be possible, how do you, you know, Himalayas, I know that, I have experience of that. So from that perspective, you know, maybe we have a tendency, I think, I have experience with this, and therefore it must be like this, only a little bigger, whether we have faith or we reject. I mean, we all have that tendency as conditioned souls. So there may be some description here that it's so far beyond our present experience, but how will we know? But, okay, it depends how you define literal. If it's like a chariot, right, so you're defining literal in terms of your present experience.
Yes.
A chariot is something that moves with a horse along 235. Right, so if you define if it can be encompassed within our present experience, then you have, I think, an argument that could remains faithful to the Siddhanta. And on that same verse,
yes.
And I'll quit after the same verse where
Sukadeva
Goswami says, you know, so even Lord Brahma doesn't understand perfectly, and Prabhupada says, what to speak of material scientists. Then at the end of the purport, he says, therefore we should be take pleasure or be satisfied with these descriptions. He doesn't say we should get a lobotomy and just be ideological simpletons. But, you know, there's a certain, there's something to these descriptions, whether we can boil them down to our present experience or what we think could be rational or not. You know, that's something to take into consideration, but our experience may not correspond point by point with that of Sukadeva Goswami or Lord Brahma. When they speak.
Thank you. That's a really important point on that. Thank you. And I actually took that seminar about Vedic cosmology that was given a year or two ago. You know, with that Prabhu who's a scientist, he was at the Krishna house. Yes, Murali Krishna. And he actually made that point, which is very nice, which Shtita D. Prabhu made, is that it's not within the jurisdiction of our current senses. You know, when we talk about Vedic cosmology, we cannot perceive it, but it doesn't mean that it isn't there. You know, we cannot perceive Mount Sumeru right now, but Mount Sumeru is there. So, any more questions?
yes, we can recall the conversation between Narada Muni and the cobbler, when Narada cobbler asked, what is Lord Vishnu doing? He told him that he was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle.
Thank you, that's
and
nice.
And that did not create any doubt in his mind. He was, yes,
right.
Oh, how wonderful.
Right.
There you go.
Thank you, that's a nice
I
point.
Also originally wanted to ask you to repeat that last statement you made before inviting questions. It's something about lamentation.
Okay, yeah, that was the shloka about time. And this is from a different part of the Bhagavatam. I found it in the first canto, chapter 9. So it talks about how time is such a powerful representation of the Lord within this world. And I think we can all sort of attest to that, how time is so powerful. So I can just read that part again if you like. Even the great controller of the universe, Brahmaji, is also under the control of that time. Therefore, one should not grudge being thus controlled by time, despite being a true follower of religious principles. Despite the power of pious acts, the power of personalities, the power of expert management, and the power of weapons under the direct supervision of Lord Krishna, the Pandavas suffered so many practical reverses, which can only be explained as due to the influence of Kala, or inevitable time. Kala is identical with the Lord himself, and therefore the influence of Kala indicates the inexplicable wish of the Lord himself. There is nothing to be lamented when a matter is beyond the control of any human being.
Okay, thank you very much.
It was a very sweet quote.
Like that, it reminds me, no one knows the inconceivable plan of the Lord. Even though great sages inquire exhaustively, they are bewildered.
Thank you, Mataji. Bhishmadev
spoke this, right?
Yes, that's very nice. Thank you. I appreciate all your input.
Thank you, Shridevi, for your wonderful class. Very informative, and a lot of questions came to my mind. But one thing I wanted to mention about Trivikram Prabhu's expression was, Prabhupada talks about we're a frog in the well.
Yeah.
And so we cannot understand.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have certain conception, and so we can't understand what that ocean is like.
Thank you.
As far as time, I was thinking, is you were mentioning about time being non-different than Lord Krishna. Is time, I guess it has, it's a person? Is time, since everything is a person, our understanding?
Well, we're learning in this chapter that it's a part of the sun god. So the sun god controls time, and it's a wheel on his chariot. So the sun god is in charge of time.
I see.
So, which is a manifestation of an expansion of Vishnu.
But yet we understanding that time is non-different than Krishna. So then it seems strange that how sun god would control time.
Well, sun god is an expansion of Vishnu within the material world. So the sun god is Vishnu.
Okay. And one interesting point was how it is only on one wheel.
Yeah.
That's somehow that I always visioned it having four wheels and...
It's two axles and one wheel, so...
It's far
it's
off.
Beyond our senses, right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I also wanted to echo Madhumati's critique on your class. Even it was a technical topic, you just presented it in such a way that I was just wanting to hear more and more. Thank you.
It means a lot to me.
Great
coming
job.
From you, Mataji. Thank you.
After hearing these discussions, you know, I was just thinking that what is the purpose of the Bhagavatam class? You know, so my understanding of this purpose of this class is to hear these descriptions and become more aware of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and to develop loving service to Him.
Yeah.
And not to figure out whether something is literal or not literal, whether this is practical, whether that's true or not. You know, first of all, you know, we have to learn from the beginning stages to accept the literal standards of the Bhagavatam. And as far as all these details, that's more on for a scientific forum per se, not for us, you know, listening in the Bhagavatam class on a daily basis. It's for us to understand the magnanimity of the Supreme Lord.
Yes.
And what is necessary for us as devotees to become purified, not to the extent of the Lord's creation or to understand His knowledge, but just to have enough for us to purify ourselves. just want to mention that.
Thank you. That's a very nice point. Yeah, I mean, to me, it's ecstatic to read about all these different descriptions of the Lord and, you know, and all these different expansions and forms that he takes for various purposes, you know, and for our benefit. I mean, it's just like so ecstatic, you know, and he's a sun god and he rides in his chariot and he regulates time with his wheel, you know. To me, it's just like so ecstatic, you know. Sorry.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the nice class. In one of the verses, the four verses that you read, was one, did one say something about repeating the repetition?
Could repetition? Just,
yes. I think maybe the last one.
Okay. Yes, this is 12.11.4. Shuta Goswami said, offering obeisances to my spiritual masters, I shall repeat to you the description of the opulences of Lord Vishnu given in the Vedas and Tantras by great authorities beginning from lotus-born Brahma.
Thank you. So when you read that, it made me think of how, because I thought it was interesting that he says, I shall repeat to you, as opposed to I shall tell you.
Yes,
and
nice.
It made me think of how Prabhupada always says, I've heard him say many times that we just have to repeat what we've heard from the spiritual master, and if we do that, then it's pure, and we don't add or subtract anything.
That's very nice. Thank you for that point. Yeah, we just take the knowledge from the parampara. That's all we do. We try to present it and understand it. Thank you. Is that it? Grantaraj, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.